Happy hump day to you. It's the 17th day of April 2024. It's Wednesday. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast. Thank you for listening, downloading, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. So much stuff going on. So many stupid things. Check out patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com to support the program so that we can continue to bring you the analysis you need of these stupid things. God help us all. I really do super appreciate all the help that you guys, because it's just me making this show, and I'm glad you guys listened to it, because it would be weird otherwise. It would be weird otherwise. So thank you, and thank you for supporting me and the program. All right, let's get started. There is a lot out there, a lot of things happening, so we're looking at, remember John Cougar Mellencamp? We'll get some audio of him later on in the show, but he's always been kind of a jerk, seemingly arrogant, and he just will cut his show short. He's trying to lecture his audience about Joe Biden and the virtues of Joe Biden. They weren't having it. They'd actually paid a ticket to have the guy sing, and so he walked out. I'm hoping that they all get their money back. I'm hoping that it also hurts his record sales and everything, but I want to start off the show today talking about the trial of Donald Trump as it goes on, and it's going to go on forever. The point of the trial is to get a conviction, ultimately. They just want to be able to say, Donald Trump is a convicted felon. Donald Trump is they got all this polling data that shows that people think Trump is being railroaded by all of these lawsuits, all of these criminal charges and everything. But the data indicates that somehow, if you get convicted on things that are railroaded, it's a game changer. And there's like a third of voters that I couldn't vote for Donald Trump if he was convicted or whatever. We'll see if that pans out. I don't know that I necessarily believe it, and it'll be up to him and his lawyers to make a good case about it. But you may sit there and you go, why is this going to take? Because there's a story, it seems apocryphal at this point, but it doesn't. I don't know if it'll pan out. That Donald Trump will not be allowed to go and visit, watch his own son graduate from high school. He's graduating from high school and he can't do that. And I thought, well, that's terrible. That's ridiculous. The judge hasn't ruled yet. The judge has set the schedule, and there have yet to be any rulings about specific days off for specific events. But I would point out that it is April. It's the middle of April. April, May. June is when graduations happen, is it not? We're still quite a ways away from this. We've got some time. So I wouldn't get too bent out of shape about it. I just, you know, I don't want anybody to be manipulated, even if it's for something I agree with or support. So just be prepared. But you go, well, June, why the hell would this trial even take so long? Well, they need it to take long. Not only do they want the conviction. Here, they do. They want to be able to say, Donald Trump has been convicted. Donald Trump. They would absolutely lose their lunch if Donald Trump got acquitted by a New York jury. It'd be incredible. I don't think that'll happen, but you never know. I think the best outcome that Trump can hope for is a hung jury. Right, and a mistrial being declared. You get one person on there who goes, I'm not going to support this no matter what. And that's it. That's about the best you can hope for. And even then, the left will go, it was so close, they were one vote away, and blah, blah, blah. But there's also another reason why they want to drag this out. Donald Trump is required to be there every day of this trial. The longer they can drag this out, the longer they can keep him off the campaign trail. Look, Joe Biden is not good on the campaign trail. Joe Biden is not going to be doing events very often. He's going to be flown to Milwaukee. He's going to be flown to Detroit. He's going to give his speech. He's going to awkwardly be seen around people, stumble his way off of the stage. He's really kind of a zombie. He's like The Walking Dead as you watch him walk. He's so paranoid and focused on what his feet are doing that he forgets to swing his arms. Watch him. Watch him walk. It's it's creepy. But they're not going to be able to do too many. There's no such thing as a Biden rally, right? Unless they really want to pump him full of Adderall. And it's no mistake, by the way, no accident. Where is that story? If I still have it open. Yeah, this one. This is great. Axios reported last week, drug shortages reach all-time high. So with 323 medicines in short supply, U.S. drug shortages have risen to their highest level since the American Society of Health System Pharmacists began tracking in 2001. The high water mark should energize efforts in Congress and federal agencies to address the broken market around what often critical blah, blah, blah. One of the biggest drug shortages in Washington, D.C., Adderall. There is a massive drug shortage for Adderall in Washington, D.C. Now, do you think that's a coincidence with Joe Biden residing there? They're going to pump him full of Adderall to get him to be coherent? So they can't really do too many, unless they stocked up. They can't really do too many campaign rallies, per se. There's been no seeming attempt to get Joe Biden to do a town hall. Have you noticed that? It's weird. So there is, and Joe Biden will never go a country mile near Fox News. He just won't. And talk about, I'm a president, I want to bring the country together, and you refuse to talk to half of it. It's pretty bad. Of course, you'd have to have a media willing to point that out. But they need this trial to go on as long as possible in New York because it gives Joe Biden cover. If Donald Trump, people will notice, if he's not out there, if the president isn't out there, but they won't notice as much if Donald Trump also isn't out there. See what I'm saying? It also gives, you know, if one person is actively campaigning, it gives them an advantage. Since Joe Biden can't really actively campaign all that much, Donald Trump has a natural advantage. This mutes that, at least for a while. They're saying maybe 6 to 8 weeks for this trial at a minimum. And now they're just in jury selection, which is going to be dragged out forever because the judge has made the unprecedented move. They have a questionnaire they have to fill out. 42 multi-part questions to be even considered for this jury. And the judge is allowing them to answer the questions individually on the stand. If you've ever been a part of jury pool, jury selection, you get called up there, they ask you a bunch of questions, whether you know anything about this case, you know anybody involved in this case, et cetera, et cetera. Can you be impartial and fair? All that stuff. And they have other questions, too, because this is obviously a sort of exceptional case. The judge has to. Even though the judge is ridiculously biased, a Biden donor, his daughter has made millions off of not only being a liberal activist, anti-Trumper, but off of her organization, raised money off of this specific case that her father's seeing. And her father's like, I see no conflict of interest. It's just unbelievable. Again, if Donald Trump were convicted, there are so many grounds on which this thing could be overturned and would be overturned. And one of them is that the judge should have recused himself because his family has a very serious vested financial interest in this trial. But he won't be because you get to recuse yourself. It doesn't matter why it's thrown out. They want the conviction. It won't be thrown out probably, until after the election. They need the conviction. The longer this trial takes, the more likely it won't be thrown out and turned over until after the election as well, or at least after early voting starts. So Democrats have the clock working to their advantage. But some of the questions, I thought it would be interesting to look at some of the questions that the potential jury pool has to answer. Now, there's the standard boilerplate. Are you married? What's your education background? Where do you work? You got any kids? Blah, blah, blah. Those are fairly standard, although not uniform. It says, have you, a relative or a close friend, ever worked for a company or organization that is owned or run by Donald Trump or anyone in his family? Pretty, I guess that's kind of an important thing. You want to know that. Have you, a relative or close friend, ever volunteered for a Trump presidential campaign, the Trump presidential administration, or any other political entity associated with Mr. Trump? If you attended a rally or campaign event for Donald Trump. Now, I would add, and I would ask, what about Democrats? That might not be disqualifying. The judge likely wouldn't allow it to be disqualifying. It's New York City. There would be, you'd be hard-pressed to find people, if they were involved at all, who weren't involved in Democratic politics. But for the record, getting people on the record, I think would be important. Have you signed up for or ever been signed up or subscribed to the following newsletter, email listserv, run by or on behalf of Mr. Trump for the Trump Organization? Do you currently follow Donald Trump on any social media sites, or have you done so in the past? You have a relative or close friend ever worked or volunteered for any Trump organization? Have you attended a rally, campaign event for a Trump group organization? Are you signed up? Have you been signed? These are really repetitive. Do you currently follow blah, blah, blah? Have you ever considered yourself a supporter or supporter of or belonging to any of the following? The QAnon movement, Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, Boogaloo Boys, Antifa. Okay, there you go. One of these things is not like the other. How about, you know, Democratic Socialists of America? But just the Democratic Party. The Teamsters yesterday were chanting death to America. How about them? How about Just Stop Oil? Any of these radical environmental or anything? Do you have strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about whether former president may be criminally charged in state court? Do you have any feelings or opinions about how Mr. Trump is being treated in this case? Do you have any opinions about the legal limits governing political contributions? Some of this stuff is absurd, but you can see how, if you wanted to, you could go through all 42 questions with potential jurors on the stand. That is the ultimate foot dragging. Honestly, I think it's sort of, it's beyond obvious that the jig is up and that they're going to do everything they can to get a conviction of Donald Trump, right? They're not going to let the facts stand in their way. The charges are ridiculous. They've made up. You're charged with an accessory crime when there's no crime to be committed. You're mad that Donald Trump didn't pay his pay off the hush money with campaign money, but used his own money, and that was somehow an illegal campaign contract. It's just, it's absurd. It's beyond the point of absurdity. Not surprising, but it's incredibly stupid. So you have all this going on, and what is ultimately going to be decided? What is ultimately going to be the result is nothing. This judge is not going to sentence Donald Trump to prison in the middle of a presidential campaign. They let murderers go on appeal. They let god-awful, terrible people out during the appeals process. So Donald Trump isn't going to end up in prison. The Secret Service is never going to allow him to end up in prison, especially over something. If he murdered somebody, it'd be a little different, but especially over something as garbage as this. This is a show trial. This is the weaponization of the courts for the purpose of politics. That's all it is. It's as transparent as the day is long. And yet it is being treated as though this is important, as though this is necessary and urgent, an urgent matter facing the country. Before we get to this morning Joe clip, there's a lot of people are wildly excited. Donald Trump fell asleep in the courtroom. Donald Trump, I'm sorry, but there's a couple of things about this. Jury trials, jury selection is boring as hell. Having gone through it, not because I was, you know, up for murder or anything like that. They never found the body, at least not yet. Knock wood. But because I was on a jury, I was called for jury duty a couple of times down in Baltimore. And I actually made a jury once. The first time I went, this is before Jonah Goldberg turned into, what he is now. Liberal fascism was out. wasn't all that old. It was probably a year old, his book with the smiley face on the cover with the Hitler mustache. And I brought it with me. I thought, what can I do to get out of jury duty? What's the easiest way? And so I'm just sitting there in the jury room reading liberal fascism. I wasn't really liberal, reading liberal fascism. The movie Last Holiday with, I think, Queen Latifah and Steve Martin, maybe. And it was terrible, but that's what they were playing in the jury room. And then so it's kind of like had the book open, just wanted to be seen as reading it. And then he's holding it in an unnatural way, the way that people hold up newspapers in movies when they're trying to hide behind them, sitting on a park bench. He's holding it up, reading it like that, looking at it like that. And then I get called into the room, in the courtroom, and sitting there. And I was asked what the book was by the judge, and he just kind of chuckled. And I got dismissed that time. It was easy. The second time, I went in, and I was like, yeah, no, probably guilty. I tend to think that everybody's... I was just trying to get out of it. I actually made the jury. They put me on the jury. They all agreed. And so I was like, oh, great. Now I'm off work for a couple of days. I didn't mind it. I didn't have a commute. It was just downtown. I wasn't living that far from the courthouse. But it was still just a pain in the butt. And then on the second day, like halfway through the trial, the dude on trial, allegedly... I have to throw that in there as I roll my eyes. Allegedly tried to kill somebody at a bus stop. Jumped out of a van and tried to shoot somebody at a bus stop. And, you know, not a laughing matter, not a joking matter. But I remember distinctly that he shot 15 times from about 10 feet away and didn't hit anything. I don't know, maybe hit the bus stop thing, but he did not hit any human being. So it was just attempted murder. And it was good that nobody was shot. Anyway, he decided to cop a plea halfway through the second day. So we got our $30 or whatever it was and went our separate ways. We saved the republic from this guy. I doubt he probably got no jail time. He's probably been out and killed 14, 15 people by now. So maybe his aim has improved. We shall never know. But I just remember thinking, now this is horrible. Horrible, and I don't recommend it, and it's not a good thing, children. But I remember my only thought was, God, you've really terrible aim. And that was it. I don't know. It was some sort of drug thing, so it wasn't like, oh, my God, how could you ever? You're a good man gone bad, and this kid was mining. No, it was a drug turf thing. So, like, yeah, not really super surprising, but I thought, there's just no aim whatsoever. Nothing. Like, how do you even do? I don't know that I could do that. I don't know if I could try to do that and do that. I think I'd accidentally shoot the person. So... yeah, that's what stuck with me. So the lesson is, if you want to get out of jury duty, bring liberal fascism with you, make sure everybody reads it. And if you want to have a good story about really poor aim, just show up and whatever. But mostly just put a movie on your phone, because whatever they play, the jury pool sucks. Now let us get to Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe. Joe is really mad lately. It's fake outrage, too. Now, what I want you to know about this clip, more than anything else, is that Al Sharpton and Eddie Glaude Jr. are sitting there, right? They're sitting there as part of this panel of this group of people, of whatever the hell the morning show thing is. And both of them have made their name, and Al has made his living, over grievance politics, racial grievance politics, claiming the country's fundamentally racist, everybody's racist, everything is racist, 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 racist. Horrible country, oppressing the poor are minorities, country's racist, fundamentally founded on it, etc., etc. You know all the mantras, you know how these people think and what they chant and what they drum circle. And at one point, if you can find, I think I retweeted this, so you can find it in my Twitter thing. They cut to, at the early on, they don't do it later on, because at that point it would just become too richly ironic. They cut to Sharpton and Eddie. And they both look like, where are you going, white boy? What are you doing here? They just look like, all right, I'm not going to say anything because you have the power to screw me over, and kick me off this network. But especially Al, like, I make a lot of money going on about how horrible and racist this country is and how awful it is, and you're trying to sit here and say it's Republicans that are doing it, and realistically, the United States is wonderful and the greatest and the best. And like, these are people who, when they heard the slogan "Make America Great Again," were like, "America was never that great. I don't know what to make it great again. Well, this place has been sucking since forever. So what do you mean make it great again? Remember Governor Cuomo in New York? America was never all that great. Yeah. America was never all that great. It was never the kind of country where you could just grab a girl's boob. Like, I don't know. That's the way I describe a great country in this country. Doesn't let me do that. It sucks. Well, Joe might have the same theory. But let's listen to trans Harry Potter. And just keep that in mind, that you've got the other two people are Mike Barnicle, a noted plagiarist, and Willie Geist, who is like the Melba Toast of morning news. Just boring as all get out. Like, just, I'm just here for the, he's the utility infielder. Never gets the glory, never gets, like, somebody tired, somebody drank too much, throw in Willie Geist. Somebody pulled a hamstring, whatever it is. Mika beat up Joe because Joe was caught with a hooker. Like, all right, you gotta, no, I'm just making stuff up, wildly speculating about things that probably are true. But, I'm sure. Look, if you have as many marriages as they do, sooner or later you got to get it right, right? Right? So that's who he's talking to. And I love how he yells in there. He gets up there, blah, blah, blah. He's so mad. And you can tell he's genuinely mad by the way he calms down immediately. He's not just doing it for effect. So phony. Anyway, I've built it up enough.
Today, we just went through the numbers. United States military, by far stronger relative to the rest of the world than any time since 1945. Our economy stronger than it's been relative to the rest of the world, probably since 1945. Our soft power stronger than ever before. Culturally, we have a bigger impact across the globe. American ideas going across the globe faster than any time. Technologically, we are light years ahead of of our closest competitors. You combine the United States of America with the EU, who also these people hate. You look, combined, we have like $55 trillion GDP. Russia has a $1.4 trillion GDP. China has like an $18 trillion GDP. We are so much more powerful, so much stronger than we have ever been. Iran, why did Iran do what Iran did, knowing what the outcome was going to be? Because they didn't want to screw with the United States of America. So Donald Trump keeps talking about how America sucks. And before he got elected, America sucked. And then he got elected, suddenly America was great. Then he lost, and now America sucks again. You're voting for a guy like that? You live in the most powerful, greatest country on the face of the earth? And you're voting for a guy that tells you every day that America sucks? What's wrong with you? Who raised you? What history did you read?
That's it.
Like, where are you from? Because you may claim to be from where I'm from, but you were not raised by the same teachers I was raised by. And you don't read. Because if you read, Mike, the facts are clear. And I'm getting tired of saying this to people who claim to be patriotic but hate America, because they're always running America down. They're always trashing America. They're always saying America's horrible. Its democracy doesn't work. We need a dictatorship if Donald Trump doesn't win. I'm tired of people running America down. And on Fox News, and I'll just say it, on Fox News, they didn't want to show Donald Trump in trial. So they got three protests and said protests shut down America, basically. This weekend, there were like four migrants and a hound dog on top of a hill in New Mexico. And they had their four migrants and a hound dog cam on for hours.
There's right now, I'm looking up the hill, and there are two, three, I see a coyote. That's a hound dog, Bob. Okay, a hound dog. I mean, this is a world. They give their viewers anything to try to make America look bad. They are obsessed on trashing America when America is stronger, more powerful than ever before. Its economy stronger and more powerful than ever before. So what do? They find a trans athlete in Utah. Our world's coming to an end. Help us, Jesus. The country ain't the country I was raised in. No, it's better. It's stronger. We're more powerful. Our military's more powerful relative to the rest of the world. Our economy is stronger relative to the rest of the world. But you would never know this because they are fed a steady stream of hate America first rhetoric, which I suppose is why you have the chairman of the House GOP saying that some of those dupes, backbenchers, are actually clinging to pro-Russian propaganda and spreading it across their districts, across America, and across the House floor.
They're obsessed with trashing America. They're obsessed. Oh, really, Joe? Are you aware of what literally everybody around the table has said in the recent history to your face? I realize that probably when you're not talking, you're sitting there like staring in a mirror, thinking nasty thoughts about yourself and dirty thoughts and who knows what you do during the commercial breaks. But at some point, you should at least be aware. It's so much of what goes on in news seems to be done by people who don't follow the news. And it doesn't seem like Joe watches MSNBC. Like, I don't blame him. MSNBC is horrible. I wouldn't watch it either if I didn't have to. But you sit there and you go, well, this is, they're trashing America. This is the greatest, strongest country. Really? You're sounding like Donald Trump. No, he only loves it when he's in charge. Yeah. You should go back and watch some of the shows that you guys did when Donald Trump was president of the United States and tell me if, because it hadn't fundamentally changed all that much. Why it sucked then, why it was terrible then, why when you could walk out of the grocery store for $75 and buy a week's worth of groceries, it was awful because of Donald Trump and QAnon or whatever. But now that you can't get enough for a couple of lunches for $100, it's okay. Why it costs, $60 to fill your car, that means that we're the best and strongest and whatever. What was it about $30 trillion in debt that was terrible, but $34 trillion in debt is just swimmingly awesome, right? These people are, I'd say they're blissfully unaware, but they're such miserable sons of bleeps that you just, they're not bliss. They say ignorance is bliss. Why aren't these people happy? Because they're damn near the most ignorant people I've ever seen in my life. So as you sit there and you got this Joe Scarborough, America's greatest, I swear to God, he sounds like Donald Trump and MAGA as more so than most MAGA people. Like, how the hell is that even possible? Well, it's because that's who Joe is. That's how Joe is. He is a liberal, but he's MSNBC's liberal. MSNBC's liberal is a different kind of cat, a different breed of dude. I'm not even sure the word dude would apply. It is something special. You have to sit there and loathe yourself. You have to forsake everything you use. See, I know I've talked about this before, but it bears repeating because I don't want anybody to forget. And there's always new people listening. I get that over time you change your opinions on certain things. Doesn't matter. It's a part of human nature. If you remain consistent on everything, and I mean everything, then you, I don't actually believe that you believe those things. I think you find those beliefs to be useful to you. But human nature, human experience means you change, you grow. It could be that you You know, you care more deeply about it. You're more passionate about something. Not that you change your opinion and go in the other direction. I'm just saying that your opinion changes. On this issue, I was a 5. Now I'm a 10. Is changing, even though it's the same direction, just more passionate. But anybody who changes on everything is the same as somebody who changes on nothing. Who changes on nothing is probably arrogance. That's more understandable because that can be internalized. Like they really think that they're wrong or that they're right, and they've never given it a second thought. They won't allow doubt. They won't allow curiosity. They won't allow any experience to stand in their way. They believe X, and nothing's going to change them. It's a more respectable position, I think, than somebody who's changed on everything. But a more rational position is one that, you know what, on 95% of the things, I'm still the same way. But on this other thing, I just, you know, I've been thinking about it, or this new study came out, or there's new experience, or somebody I know went through. I now think of it differently. I think of it in a different way, whatever the case is. So it, Joe is one of those guys that falls into the everything is different. But he is different in one way from, say, the Arianna Huffington. Arianna Huffington, remember, in the 90s, when I was in college, she was a conservative firebrand. She was from the right all the time, blah, 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 blah. And now she is as left as the day is. Now she's sort of indifferent to the whole thing, but she turned left as the day is long on everything. Same with David Brock. David Brock, he exposed Hillary Clinton. He actually just got House GOP investigation documents and wrote it up. He didn't do much of the investigation, I'm told, himself. But he was conservative. He was a conservative firebrand. He was feared by the left. And then he sort of freaked out and flipped to the left completely on every single thing. Some people think it's because he was gay and he was afraid all the right would not like. Everybody knew he was gay. There's no question about it. So nobody was like, wait a second, David Brock is gay? No way, not David Brock. I would never believe that in 100,000 years. He's such a ladies' man. No. But whatever the reason was for their switch, for their flip, there was a giant pot of money sitting over there when they landed. Who wouldn't slide down a slide of, you know, in the ball pit of life, instead of balls, it was cash. Like, oh, and you get to keep as much of it as you can shove into your pockets. And that always seems to be the way it is when people switch wholesale. Joe Biden is somebody who doesn't believe in anything. He just wants to have power. But the other people are opportunists. And Joe Biden is the ultimate opportunist. Whatever he thinks is going to keep him power, he does it. I'm a devout Catholic. You can find video of him. Abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. I think abortion is bad. Abortion is a tragedy. To now, it's like, hey, come on in. We're giving 2-for-1 abortions today. So go ahead. My son is over there. If you're not pregnant, my son is over there. He'll take care of that so that you can come in and have an abortion, love abortion, and you're going to get money on the way out the door. So it's win-win-win, unless you're the baby. That sort of thing. Joe Scarborough has changed on everything. But unlike Arianna Huffington and the David Brocks of the world, he insists that he has changed on nothing. Changed on everything. Insists he changed on nothing. Spends all of his time pissing, whining, and moaning about Republicans. Supporting, oh, we need to codify Roe. We need to... Like, Joe, you used to be against that. Now, I don't care that you changed. I care that you deny that you changed. I care that you ignore that you pretend that you didn't change. That's where I kind of have the problem there, Joe. That's the problem. On everything, he has changed. But he thinks if he yells loud enough, and look, he's on MSNBC, if he wants to keep that job, and of course he wants to keep that job, it pays him $8 million a year. If you want to keep that job, you've got to keep your past under your hat. But you really only serve a couple of purposes over there. You're the lead trans Harry Potter. You're the supposed star of the show. yet you give them ideological balance. If you are the star of the show because you give them ideological balance, because for the very short time you were in Congress, you had an R after your name. If you now acknowledge that you're not an R, you're not bringing the ideological balance really anymore. Even though you've announced you've left the Republican Party, you still claim to be a conservative. You just espouse no conservatism. You support no conservatism. You have not supported a single conservative candidate, and you pal around with the President of the United States on the phone every day, who is decidedly not conservative. There is nothing conservative about what Joe Biden does or advocates. So aside from all the evidence, yeah, I suppose you are conservative. But you just watch these people and you go, how does anybody fall for this stuff? And I think it's because we want to believe. We want to believe. It's easier. If you are telling people what they want to hear, people will ignore the imperfections in the delivery device. Right? They just will. So you look the other way when Joe is sitting there lying to you. Oh, man, I'm conservative. I just don't understand this Make America Great stuff. The country is great. It's greater than it's ever been when you can go 4 years ago and find video of him going, the country is terrible, worse off, we need to get rid of Donald Trump and get Joe Biden. You can find, I don't know, 17 days worth of footage of him sitting there while the people on his panel are going, God, this country sucks. It's fundamentally racist. It's this, that, and the other thing. I bet you could find with very little effort interviews conducted by Joe of Elizabeth Warren, who has openly said many, many times that the country is fundamentally racist, founded on racism. And I bet you it doesn't come up in their discussions. And if it does, he ignores it. She brings it up, he ignores it. He probably didn't ask her about Pow Wow Chow, the cookbook for Native American cuisine that she plagiarized and when she was pretending to be a Native American. Didn't ask her about getting the job at Harvard, claiming to have been a Native American because her papa said she had high cheekbones and her grandma had high cheekbones, and that meant she was a Native American. Like, huh? And you had 1024th or whatever the hell it is. It is all a show. It is all a show. To the extent that he cares at all, he cares about his bank account. And so you just keep that in mind. You make that the filter through which you run everything. And you'll be much happier and much more sane if you happen to come across it. Now, I want to shift up and go to another clip from Morning Joe today. This is Admiral James Stavridis. Stavridis? I don't know how the hell you pronounce it. There's so many. He's a head of an investment firm. He's probably got some financial interest in this thing. But he was on to talk about the need for Ukraine. Well, that's Eric. How do you know? I don't know that he does. I'm just saying he probably does because so many people who advocate for Ukraine do so passionately, and then it turns out that they have a vested interest. When you're throwing around $60 billion in this latest aid package with no strings attached, no accountability, no concern for any of it, and both parties going, we need this through, and don't think about it too hard. There are people getting rich like you wouldn't believe. Is it going directly from the federal government to whatever consulting firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe? No. It's going to the Ukrainian government, who then hires the firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe. They have to have a couple degrees of separation, so it's not direct funding. And how much of it ends up back in the coffers of the Democratic Party or the pockets of their children? We'll never know, because that would require honesty and accountability, and that's just not in the cards. If you'd have said, well, all right, I'll vote for $60 billion for Ukraine, but only on condition that they account for the $140 billion that we've given them already. Every penny of it. Where'd it go? I want to know, even if it's lost. I want that part of the pie. I want the whole thing. You tell us where it is, and here's another $60 billion. It doesn't matter if $130 billion of it ended up in the pockets of somebody and not used it. It doesn't matter. I just want to know where it went. You just make that conditional, and they go, this is ridiculous. You're putting all these ridiculous, oppressive, restrictive conditions. Yeah, but you should be putting restrictions on it, okay? We're long past the point of emergency. What you're going to hear from retired Admiral Starvitus is that Ukraine needs this money or Russia's going to roll over them. This $60 billion, they're on the verge of collapse. They're on their heels. It's really bizarre because we have sent them like $150 billion, somewhere in there, some ridiculous more than $100 billion. You're like, okay, if $60 billion is the difference maker, if $60 billion is going to turn the tide of the war, why with more than $100 billion are they already currently losing, right? Is there like a magic tipping point number that if you reach that, if you reach this number, then Ukraine will win? You're not allowed to ask these questions, but if you just listen to these people talk, you think, okay, is there some tipping point? Shouldn't there be? If $60 billion more or else they're going to lose is the deal, and the $150 billion that we've already given them has only brought us to the point that they're going to lose, how is $60 billion more going to make the difference? And if there is a magic number, say it's $80 billion more rather than $60 billion, why wouldn't you ask for that? They don't care. They just throw more money, because when you go to the strip club with the rapper making it rain with $20 bills, just throwing them all over the place, yeah, the girls scramble and they get the money up on stage. But some of it falls on the floor, some of it falls on your lap, some of it falls near your drink, and nobody's looking. You just kind of maybe scoop together a couple hundred or a couple thousand bucks for yourself. You know, you put your jacket up on the bar and then you scoop another $300 worth of 20s or whatever. They don't care. It's a free-for-all. It's a free-for-all. If you cared about Ukraine, you should care about where the money's going. If you believe that $60 billion is going to be the difference maker, then you would want to know what happened with the $100-plus billion and why it hasn't been the difference maker. To that point, you might try to calculate what the difference is. There is no difference maker. It is straight up more. More is always the answer. We need more. There is no end in sight. If there were an end in sight, I could support it. If they have said, we're going to start talking and try and see if we can negotiate a settlement here. But telling me that Ukraine's on its heels, I don't care about Ukraine. If I'm just being honest, I don't care about Ukraine. But it's Europe's breadbasket. It's the world's breadbasket. Well, then you better plant grain someplace else. Plant extra grain someplace else, okay? We need to move the breadbasket. You shouldn't have one of the most corrupt countries on the face of the earth also play a pivotal role in the food supply of the entire species. Just maybe that's a lesson to learn from Ukraine. But that's what I take away from this is, if you need more money for you, if this is the difference maker, if this is crucial, if Ukraine is losing but $60 billion is going to turn the tide, why didn't the 100 plus billion that we've already sent turn the tide? And would you swear under penalty of perjury and an actual prosecution for violation of that law that if this doesn't work, you'll stop asking for money? Is there a cutoff? They won't. There's no accountability. There is no end in sight. It's they just want to lie their way past the next checkpoint, and then in 3 months they'll be back going, we need more money. Ukraine's about to fall. Well, if Ukraine can't stand, maybe Ukraine needs to fall. Oh, that's horrible. It is horrible. I don't want them to. But at a certain point, if you refuse to negotiate, if you refuse the even concept of listening to somebody, then you have to deal with the consequences of that, too, do you not? Here's Admiral James Starvitus on Morning Joe this morning.
Your thoughts on this aid?
I'm with Richard. Get it done. And frankly, it doesn't matter whether it's linked together, although I can make a pretty good argument that they all kind of fit together. But at this point, without question, the racehorse that needs to be in the pole position is Ukraine. Look, the Israelis are not going to be defeated by Hamas. Certainly, China is a longer-term problem. The one that really matters now is getting the aid to Ukraine. It's a military imperative. The only bright spots in Ukraine are the hits against the Russian Black Sea fleet at sea have been quite effective. Other than that, the Ukrainians are on their back foot, both in the air and on the land. Good news, they're going to add F-16s over the next couple of months, but that will not tip this balance without the bread and butter of hardcore ammunition for the battlefield, particularly artillery shells. Got to get done. And final thought, to draw a line under something the speaker said, which is the world is watching. It is watching.
Yeah, the world is watching. They're not doing anything about it, not demanding accountability, not trying to negotiate a peace. But I love it. There's no bright spot. It's horrible. Everything's falling apart. Ukraine sucks. If it just had some money, we've given them a ton of money. Yeah, but we need more money. How much more money? Well, more money. Okay, well, will this be, if it was $60 billion, will that be? Well, we need more money. We obviously need more money. We need more ammunition. Okay, well, what happened to the ammunition they've already hit? They've fired it. We've given, if somehow $60 billion is going to change the tide, why didn't twice that amount change the tide? Why did twice that amount bring them to what you make sound like the brink of defeat? But somehow giving half that amount will bring about victory. Go ahead. Can you explain that to me? You can't ask that question. You're not allowed to ask that question. I believe you'll be escorted out of MSNBC's and NBC's world headquarters by asking that question. I'm pretty sure Comcast will refuse to even provide your house with cable if you ask that question. At some point, doesn't this have to occur to somebody besides me? There you're going, okay. Now, I have a lot of people going, it's a waste of money, don't want to spend the money. I'm perfectly willing to spend the money if I'm not being lied to. And I see an end result, and you go, all right, we need to also try to end this thing. Oh, I don't know, we're going to lose territory. Well, you can lose a little bit of territory in a negotiated peace, maybe even just the territory you already lost, ultimately, to the Russians under the Biden administration. You can do that, or you can lose it all. The choice is yours, because sooner or later, the American people will go and finally have enough representatives to go, we're just done. We're just done. At which point, Russia will roll over you. You can negotiate peace and then set up defensive positions and then have time to regroup just in case Russia decides they don't want peace anymore. Or you can just sit back and lose it all. It's up to you. It's your country. You can lose it however you like or maintain it however you like. I realize it's not a very popular opinion amongst Ukrainians, but at a certain point, you're going to have to at least answer questions like why $60 billion will be the difference maker and what we can expect if your fighter is on the ropes in what, round two with Ivan Drago, Apollo Creed was getting holy hell beat out of him. At some point, Rocky should have thrown in the towel instead. No, he keeps fighting and he ends up getting killed. Tragic loss in the sports world. But you sit there and you go, at some point, doesn't the self-preservation gene kick in? Now, I'm not sure we're getting the truth out of Ukraine anyway. I don't know how bad it is. I don't know how good it is. I don't know the situation over there. We're told intermittently things are going great. We need to keep it going because things are going great. And now we're told, well, it's terrible. They're going to fall. I don't know. The only footage you ever really see out of Ukraine is occasionally there's a half-bombed out apartment building in Kiev. And they go, yeah, Russian shot it. And like, okay. And that's it. It just goes on. The city of Kiev isn't flattened. The business of Kiev goes on, and you go, that seems a little bit weird. Like, maybe you should try to end this thing. It doesn't seem to be going too well for Russia. Doesn't seem to be going too well for Ukraine. Seems to be going really well for defense contractors and the consultant class and the corrupt politicians on both sides, but not for anybody else. Maybe that's all that really matters in the end. I don't know. There is some breaking news up on Capitol Hill. Representative Tom Massey of Kentucky. He is, he's a smart guy, but he's one of those guys that is too smart for his own good. I like him. He's a good friend of a good friend of mine. But he is one of those people. I talk a lot about principles, but then there's pragmatism. And pragmatism on certain things is required, and it does have to trump principles, especially when it comes to insignificant things that really aren't going to make a difference. Nothing's going to change. If they're talking about, you know, the Ukraine bill, the debt ceiling, whatever, government is going to have to function. There's not a damn bit of, there's nobody out there. There's no other choice. And I'm talking about the speakership. Thomas Massey tweeted just a little bit ago, I just told Mike Johnson in conference that I'm co-sponsoring the motion to vacate that was introduced by Marjorie Taylor Greene, meaning boot him out of the speaker's office. He should pre-announce his resignation as Boehner did so we can pick a new speaker without ever being without a GOP speaker. This is just so stupid. Why? Do I think that Mike Johnson is the greatest speaker in the history of the world? Of course not. He's not. Nobody would ever be. You have to recognize that as conservative as you are, and this is what it is. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a bit of a clown. Sorry to her fans out there, but she is. She votes well, but you have to conduct yourself not as a clown. She conducts herself as a clown. So no matter how she votes, it doesn't matter. Her existence feeds the Democratic machine. It feeds the Democratic coffers. They fundraise off of her because she talks about Jewish space lasers and conspiracies and stupidities and all sorts of other things. And she just, look, when you're 10 feet tall and bulletproof, you can get to be an idiot. The difference is Republican idiots are paid attention to by the media, and then used by the Democrats. Republicans don't really use Democratic idiots very well. If not, if they did, members of the goon squad would be all over the place. It would be made the face of the Democratic Party. Cori Bushy would not be able to go anywhere without Cori Bush's face being plastered up there, without Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib. They would be running ads educating the public on what the media won't educate the public on. All over the place. They don't. And it's not because, well, they're spending a lot of money on Trump's. No, they're not. They have plenty of money. They just have different priorities. Well, they need to spend money on getting the vote out. And really, yeah, they do. They need to do all of that. They need to do everything. Everything all at once. Well, that's a tall order. Yet somehow Democrats manage to do it, right? Somehow Democrats manage to do it. Maybe you sit down with some rich conservative billionaires and you say, look, I know you guys are a pain in the ass when you lay out money, you go, when am I going to see this money back, or what am I going to get for this money? Or I only support this cause, so I'm only going to give money. It's not the time for that. This is sort of, you know, a near existential moment for the Republic, and you're just going to have to open up and fund super PACs to the tune of money that's going to, you know, you're going to feel it. George Soros, today it was announced, gave $60 million to left-wing organizations. And this, now that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's a little bit of, it's not even the tip of the iceberg. That's just a little bit of what he's given, what he gives. He gives willingly. He doesn't sit there and go, well, what am I going to see for this? He knows what he's doing. He's advancing the ball. And if it advances the ball in the direction he wants to go, eventually it will get to the causes that he supports, and they will be advanced in that direction as well. Conservatives don't have that thought. They go, well, I don't see. I'm not going to give to this cause because I care more about this other thing, and there's no group set up to. The point is to win. okay, to win. We can haggle over the fine print later. It doesn't matter. You can be the most principled loser in the locker room, or you can win and continue to fight for what you do care about. But there's one side that stands a chance of moving the country in the right direction, and the other side who's hell-bent on not. But they don't. They're too selfish, they're too stupid, they're too arrogant, they're too whatever it is, or all of the above, to give a damn about it. And then you have people like Tom Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing this out of, I don't know why she's doing it. She just can't seem to stand that somebody isn't looking to her or listening to her. She's not to be taken seriously as a person, as a member of Congress. She is as a threat to the Republican chances of retaining the House in the fall. Of that, she is a major serious threat. Tom Massie is a person who is to be taken seriously, who is then kneecapping himself and doing the same thing by helping row the boat over the waterfall. There is no other speaker. Who else is there? Who would want the job if you have to deal with idiots like this? Who would? You want a job? It's going to be very high profile, and then in like 3 months, a whole bunch of people are going to stab you in the back and throw you out on your ass. And so, you want that job? No. Why not? Well, did you hear the job description? Well, no. All you have to do is the bidding of like two or three jackasses, and that's it. But what they advocate for is, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Well, no. These are the people who are like, well, we'll just shut the government down. Okay, shut the government. Okay, fine. I'm all fine with shutting the government down. Problem is they reopen it. Problem is they also get their ass handed to them in an election when they do something like that, because shutting the government down is a tactic, not a goal. People don't seem to understand that. What do you do when your demands are not met? We're going to shut down the government unless we cut 10% from the budget. Well, okay, there's no Democrat going to go for that. I'd go for it, but there's no Democrat going to go for that. More than half the Republican caucus isn't going to go for that either. So you've already lost. What's your plan B? What's next? Well, we'll just keep it shut down. No, sooner or later, we are going to have to reopen the government. No, we won't. We won't fund the government. We won't. There will be, forget the fact that you have a job to do, right? Think about the economic ramifications, repercussions, and problems that come along with what you're doing. If it's shut down for months and months and months, there'd be a huge, huge problem, right? Would there not be? Well, yeah, but we've got to do, okay, but what? How? We'll shut it down. What do you do when your bluff is called? What do you do when the rest of the people just go, no, we're not going to do it? You would think in a rational world, people would act rationally and they go, all right, well, you want to shut this down. You want to, all right, we'll make a compromise. But there is no, the left doesn't compromise. The left isn't going to compromise. And these people on the right don't compromise. The Marjorie Taylor Greene, she doesn't have to. She cares about her seat, her job. That's it. She's got it. This helps her. This will help her fundraise. That's really what it's all about. It'll hurt Republicans across the board, but it'll help her fundraise. And you go, well, that's a pretty cynical view. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me where I'm wrong. Show me how I'm wrong. You can't, but I'll wait. You sit there and you watch these people and you go, hey, wouldn't your energy be better spent trying to elect conservatives who are with you? Because right now you're a very distinct minority. You're like four or five people in the House. Four or five people in the House. That's it. You could spend the rest of the year vacating the chair and then having everybody vote. And if Democrats vote with Republicans because they just Democrats wouldn't, they just sit there and go, let Republicans destroy themselves. There'll be nobody stepping up to get the job. Nobody who's pure enough for you to get the job. You don't want the job and you would get two votes anyway. So what do you do? What is the end game? Where's the victory here? Because I'll tell you, It's annoying. You watch football and you go, they just made a 3-yard game. Why wouldn't you throw the ball? The guy's wide open. Instead, they're throwing a little screen pass that gets 3 yards on first down. Well, because it's now 2nd and 7. The 7 is what matters. You only need 7 yards. The ball is going in the right direction. Ultimately, in 3 plays before you punt, you have to get to those 10 yards to get a new set of downs. But if the ball is moving in the right direction all the time, you're still doing all right. That's why you can handle a 5-yard run rather than a 50-yard bomb. In fact, a bunch of 5-yard runs together sort of opens up the prospect of a 50-yard bomb. You have to think strategically. These people don't think strategically. They think, what can I do? What can I do? I am entitled. You are a backbench insignificant member of a dwindling caucus that now Republicans, I think, have a majority of 2 in the House, maybe, because of resignations and deaths and illnesses and everything. It's to the point that these 2 people should resign. Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene should resign. They are pushing the Democrats to the point that they're pushing Republicans over the edge, that they're just going to lose the House anyway. We might as well cut out the middleman, shouldn't we? Then, of course, Republicans would never be able to find themselves a minority leader any easier than they could find a speaker. But I don't know what the end game here is, aside from stupidity. Aggrandizement. Oh, you'll hear the names Taylor Greene and Massey more than you ever have before in the next week. Why? Because why not? They're getting attention. I don't think Massey's doing it, but Massey is one of those people, and this is why I don't like libertarians. Not as people, but as political allies. Now, especially because they're basically leftists for the most part. They're libertarians, and like the Cato Institute has gone off the deep end, the progressive movement, open borders and all that crap. But libertarians would sit there and go, well, their arms folded. Say the ball, the line is 0. They're at 0. You want to get it to 10. We want to get it to 10. Libertarians want it to be 10. Republicans will get a victory to get it to 4, or could get a victory to get it to 4. And you go, well, 4 is better. Because the Democrats want to take it to minus 10. You go, well, if we get it to 4, that's 4 more points closer, 4 places closer to 10. Take that. Libertarians, you work with us. If we unite, we can get it to 4. And libertarians sit there with their arms folded, smoking their germs, clove cigarettes, and going, it's not 10. I know it's not 10, but 4 is a hell of a lot closer to 10 than 0 is, and it's way a lot closer than negative 4, which is where the Democrats are trying to take it. So why don't you help us get it to 4, and then we'll fight over the remaining 6, right? We want to get there. Some people only want to get it to 8 or 9 or whatever. You want to get it to 10. We'll keep moving in that direction, because in that direction is a better direction than the opposite direction, and we can stop it from going the other direction. We can move it in our direction, granted not to as far as we want it to, but in our direction is better than the other way. So work with us, get it to 4, and then we'll start fighting for another 2 or 3. We'll keep moving. It's not 10. That's the libertarian attitude. It's not, we can't support this. It is not pure. That's what Tom Massey is. That's how Tom Massey is. He's too smart for his own good. He sits there and goes, I want 10. Okay, you can't have 10 right now. Well, why don't we just shut down this and we'll defund it? Okay, great. I want to defund NPR. I want to defund Planned Parenthood. I want to defund all of that. But how? In the current configuration, your wishes are great. They're great. The instincts are right. The makeup of the House, the configuration of the House of Representatives is not conducive to your fever dreams right now. It's just not there. So we can either dance in fantasy land where you live and never get out of bed, and you can live in a world where you've accomplished all your goals, or we can deal with reality right now, live to fight another day, and keep pulling in the direction we want it to go. It's a tug of war that never ends. And if your instinct is to take out a knife and start sawing away at the rope, I have to question which team you're ultimately on. I don't question your ideology. I don't question your motives. I question your strategic thinking and, quite frankly, your intelligence to a certain degree. And I'd say that as knowing Tom Massey is a very smart man. He's just, there are some people who are well-educated beyond their intelligence, people who don't have the common sense. Common sense comes in strategically handy and or way more handy on strategy than anything else. But no, instead, they're just going to be suicide bombers and blow themselves up, take everybody with them, and go into minority status in the House of Representatives, knowing full well that they have the high ground. What is it I always say about the high ground? All it really gives you in politics is a really nice view of your defeat. So congratulations, guys. That's the road you're on. Just to be clear, as you watch this garbage and the stupidity unfold in Congress, like, there is no, they don't have a plan. They don't offer anybody, this person should be speaker. It's weird. Steve Scalise, the guy who was almost murdered by James Hodgkinson, Rachel Maddow devotee, committed progressive Democrat activist. He was almost murdered by him. I go, oh, well, he's good enough to be the majority leader. He was good enough to be majority whip. They elect him to all these positions of leadership. Go, all right, I'll be speaker. No, not you. Well, then who? Well, Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson's been in Congress for about 30 minutes, couple of terms, like I think this might be his second term. He might be, aside from the very first Speaker of the House, the Speaker with the least experience. And you go, he's not good enough. Well, who is? Jim Jordan. No, not Jim Jordan. Now, Massey and Taylor Greene go, oh, I want this person, I want that person, I want the other person. You have to realize that these people were already unpopular to begin with. And this is only going to make them less popular. They can force a vote. If Democrats side with them, they can fire the Speaker of the House. And Democrats will, because there's a perfect advantage for Democrats. Look, the Republicans can't be trusted with leadership. They can't get their act together. And honestly, Republicans, if this happens, they can't be trusted with leadership. They can't get their act together. You don't have to like what the government is doing to recognize that government has to do certain things, that government has to exist. So what do? Well, maybe, who knows? Maybe these two will principle themselves right into the Democratic caucus when it comes to organization of the House, and they'll vote for Hakeem Jeffries and make him Speaker of the House, because I don't know where else you go from this. They insisted that somebody new get in there. They were very wildly excited that Mike Johnson, that you never heard of. I promise you never heard of Mike Johnson, because I'd never heard of Mike Johnson. It's my job to pay attention to this crap, and I'd never heard of the guy. Like, who? Mike Johnson? Is that a fake name? Is John Doe a little too on the nose? There's nobody. Mike Johnson? I was like, Bill Jones. Yeah, that sounds totally real right there. That sounds like the name a celebrity would register at a hotel under. Not a real human being's name. Mike Johnson. Well, we got a speaker. No, this speaker isn't good enough. You're starving. You pull a fish. I don't like that kind of fish. What, do you like starvation? Throw it back. I said I don't like that kind of, it's too fishy. Well, you're fishing. It's right there in the name. It might taste a little fishy. When the Republican Party, particularly in the House of Representatives, turns into Edward Norton beating the hell out of himself in his boss's office in Fight Club, it's time to, I don't know, rethink certain members. Is there anybody out there willing to challenge these people? Is it too late to challenge these people? I don't know. It's too late to stop them from screwing things up, though, I fear. So as we've got Republicans stepping on rakes and hitting themselves in the... I've never seen anybody be their own Galooly before. A lot of people won't recognize that name, Galooly. But it was the ex-husband of what's her face? Tanya Harding. He's the one who organized the caning of the knee of Nancy Kerrigan. Happened in Detroit. I remember it was like, oh, somebody got beat up in Detroit. And then there was more to it. It was like, nah, yawn. Somebody got beat up in Detroit. But anyway, while we're talking about Republican incompetence, let's talk about Democrat incompetence again, shall we? Because it is fertile ground. They fertilize it every single day with every word they say. Yesterday at the White House press briefing, you can tell they you can tell there are serious matters happening in the world when they bring in Admiral John Kirby, retired Admiral John Kirby. He is the spokesmodel for the National Security Agency, the National Security Council. But he's not historic, if you know what I mean. He's just, you know, straight white guy. What are you going to do? Admiral, military, probably the worst kind, except for he's liberal, so he's okay. They'll kill him last. But he's not historic like Karine Jean-Pierre, who is the first immigrant, the first woman of color, and the first lesbian to be all rolled in one. All rolled in. Now, there'll be somebody, there'll be just a normal run-of-the-mill lesbian, there'll be just a normal run-of-the-mill woman of color, and they'll go, oh, it's a historic first. She's just the first run-of-the-mill woman of color there, who will be the press secretary. Some Democrat will go, this, they'll ignore. And if it's a Republican administration, they'll ignore it and go, yeah, no, never mind, forget about that. And then they'll go, it's historic first, because there have been so few women of color who aren't lesbians or immigrants themselves. They find a way to ignore conservative firsts, like, you know, Kellyanne Conway being the first woman to run a presidential campaign that won, right? Big first. You would think that the feminist crowd would be going nuts for that. They're going nuts because of that, not for that. It's a difference. Anyway, back to Admiral Kirby. Over the weekend when Israel was attacked by Iran, in the lame week exposing Iran as a paper tiger attack that they launched, the president of the United States had gone off to Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, because he wants to relax in his mansion, and I'm sure that he has a hyperbaric chamber there, and there, it's a way, see, how do I put this without sounding conspiratorial, because it's just simple resuscitation of facts. If lobbyists and mega donors go to the White House to meet with the president, they have to sign in. There's something called the White House visitor logs. It's not a tradition dating back to the days of Abraham Lincoln of a pile of dead trees sitting outside the White House where people are made to wait until the president can see them. No, that would be too quaint. It is a list of people, everybody who goes into that building, whether you're meeting with the president or not, has to sign in. The Secret Service has to vet them. Now, it's sort of a quick vetting. They check, see if you have any active warrants, if there's anything that really pops up. They probably do a quick Google search, what have you. It's if you've just gone on a tour of the East Wing of the White House, you've been vetted. If you've had meetings in the White House or the old executive office building, which I've had, you have to provide them with information before you go over there. Especially if you're going to be anywhere in the proximity of the president or the vice president, they go, we're going to need your social security number, your date of birth. They will do a deep dive on you. Not super deep, but deep enough to know that whether or not you're crazy. And they're not looking like, man, we got to make sure that you're going to not bring in a gun and try and assassinate somebody in the White House. They have metal detectors and a very thorough screening process to prevent that. What they want to prevent is that you are somebody with a weird checkered past, did some time or whatever. They don't want to be caught off guard when in 6 months the picture of you and the president at the table having a meeting comes out and said, did you know that this guy once killed six people out in New Mexico because they were snoring too loud or whatever? They want to avoid that. So they will deny you entrance or access depending on what they find in there. They keep those records as part of the Federal Records Act. Those records are also available to the public as part of the Federal Records Act. And Democrat administrations hate that. Hate that. Why? Well, because Republican administrations are more honest about it. You're going to have a meeting with somebody in the White House, you just go to the White House. Doesn't matter what you do for a living. If you're a Democrat, you ran around going, I will not meet with lobbyists. We will not meet with lobbyists. No lobbyists. Blah, 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 blah. Well, then you can't have a whole bunch of lobbyists in the White House visitor logs. What do you do? Well, in the Obama administration, they used their private email to correspond with lobbyists and set up meetings at the Starbucks and the McDonald's half a block away from the White House. See, they were meeting with lobbyists, just not in any way that the public could easily find out about it. People eventually found out about it because people are recognizable and lobbyists are recognizable. And sooner or later, people slip up and somebody will talk or whatever. Maybe it's a disgruntled lobbyist, whatever. But it's one of those things where you're not supposed to use personal emails for the conducting of business. But the Obama administration did that because they wanted to hide all the lobbyists they were meeting with outside of the White House so they would avoid disclosure in the White House visitor logs. It's wildly disingenuous. It's completely and totally fraudulent. It's an absolute lie, and they faced zero consequences for it. They're doing the same thing now. By the way, they're just doing it differently. While staff is meeting offsite, they're not meeting a half a block away from the White House. They recognize they're going to have to probably travel a little bit further away to keep it away from prying eyes. But more importantly, for meetings with the President of the United States, the extra vetting that goes along with that is being bypassed. How? By having it done in Delaware. True story. The Secret Service still vets people. It's their job. They just don't do as thorough a job of it when the meeting takes place in Wilmington or Rehoboth. And most importantly, this White House, the Biden administration, refuses to release lists of visitors to Joe Biden's personal mansion in Wilmington, Delaware, or his beachfront mansion in Rehoboth Beach. Why? Because they say these are private residences. This is personal. These are friends. These are not official visits. Now, if you were trying to meet with the president and you didn't want records of it to go out there, if you were a mega donor, you don't want the president, they don't want the public to know you're having influence, whatever it is, you do your meetings in Rehoboth. You sit there and you go, boy, Joe Biden sure goes to Delaware an awful lot. He must love his home state. No, he raises a lot of money. He talks to a lot of donors. He gets a lot of advice. He may well be meeting with a whole bunch of medical professionals that are pumping him full of God knows what to try and make him semi-coherent throughout the day. All of that is possible and more and worse, but we don't know because they won't tell us. In the name of transparency, they pull the curtain forward, not back. So you sit there and you go, isn't it a bit odd that not only the president spends an awful lot of time in Delaware, he's catching political heat for being in Rehoboth as much as he is. More than half of his administration he's spent, quote, in Delaware. But on a weekend when Iran announced that they were going to attack Israel within the next 48 hours, isn't it odd that the president of the United States went to Rehoboth Beach anyway? On Friday? Now, they made the announcement on Friday. That means that the attack was going to happen on Friday or Saturday. It happened on Saturday. Iran, oddly enough, was telling the truth. And Joe Biden had to come back from Delaware to deal with the situation, so we're told. But what's curious is when asked in the past, why is it that Joe Biden sure spends an awful lot of time in Rehoboth Beach and in Wilmington, spends a lot of time at his mansions there? The response from the White House is, The president is president anywhere he goes. The president can wherever he goes, the support is there. It doesn't matter where there is, because that's where there's a mini White House or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. That same old line that they've been saying forever. And it's true. Normally. But Joe Biden doesn't travel with that many people, not nearly as many administration officials, at least not to his homes in Delaware. When he goes on vacation, then he kind of has to, you know, bring people with him when it's an official vacation, where it's just a trip home for the weekend. Curiously, that's not the case. He traveled back from Rehoboth on Saturday. And that begged a question from Peter Doocy of Fox News, is you tell us he's president anywhere and everywhere, Admiral Kirby. Why did he come back? If he's president anywhere, why did he come back? If he's got the capacity to do it, the people are around him and everything, he can do that. What you'll hear here is the question. And then you'll hear Kirby's response. And what you notice is I didn't use the word answer from Kirby. I use the word response, because Kirby doesn't answer the question. Kirby gives a response. Kirby gives the president was here taking care of business and calling Situation Room, blah, blah, blah. There's no place as secure as the White House. But the president's beach mansion is pretty damn secure. You can't just walk. They're not there right now, but you can't walk up and try and sell Girl Scout cookies by knocking on the door. You're not going to make it there. You're not going to be able to drill into the ground up the street and tap into the phone lines. Everything is taken care of so that the president could president there if something happened. If for some weird reason he came running back. Could it be because he didn't travel with all the necessary and requisite people? Could it be that he was meeting with other people there that he didn't want staff to know about? Could it be that he's mostly a figurehead? And they have to bring him back to the White House because they have to have him be seen doing something. Because they know he won't actually be doing something. They see him walking into the White House. And, oh, wait, the president is in the Oval Office. We'll take a couple still pictures and release it. President's there meeting with so-and-so. He called Benjamin Netanyahu from the Situation Room. Does it really matter where the phone call originates? The fact that he told Netanyahu that he wouldn't support a response to the attack by Iran is more newsworthy, but that gets buried in the shuffle of the level of importance being ramped up to 11 because the president made the phone call from the Situation Room rather than the room where he kept one of the boxes that was littered with stolen classified documents he'd had. Listen to this exchange and just note how Kirby doesn't actually answer the question. Skillfully, but he doesn't answer the question.
And you guys often defend all the trips to Delaware by saying the president is not on vacation. He's working. He can be the president from anywhere. So why do you have to come back on Saturday?
Well, we got indications shortly after arriving. We got better, firmer intelligence and information about the specific timing of what we expected to be this Iranian attack. And the president didn't bat an eye before getting back on that helicopter and coming back. And he was here all Saturday night in the Situation Room from mid-afternoon till late at night, getting real-time updates from General Kirilla and from his defense team all throughout the night, including calling Prime Minister Netanyahu right from the Situation Room. And as Karine mentioned, on Sunday, he was right back at it again, working the G7, calling King Abdullah. I don't know what else to tell you. He had a very busy full weekend.
No, he was very busy. That doesn't explain why he had to come back. If he can be president from anywhere, why wasn't he president from where he was? Can he not be president from where he was? There is another possibility. He simply can't be president from where he was. They don't have the mansion in Rehoboth set up to handle national security emergencies or what have you. It could be all sorts of issues there. They can't talk about it. They won't talk about it. Now, if it was Corinne Jean-Pierre, she would have been stumbling and fumbling and mumbling and bumbling. I don't know who trying to find the right page in the binder, and it wouldn't be there, and she'd be absolutely screwed. Kirby is a skilled liar. He's falls into the evil, not stupid category. Corinne, it's definitely in the stupid category. Evil or ignorant remains to be seen. But I found that rather curious. I rather found that to be curious. Also, I found to be curious was the next question that Admiral Kirby fielded. One of the things that you got to remember about this attack on Iran is this administration and the previous Democrat administration have thrown billions of dollars at Iran. Now, they'll all argue it was their money. It was that you freed it up. It was seized. It was frozen. They couldn't access it. Meanwhile, American hostages in the Carter administration are still, you know, owed money from the Iranian regime. They're not using that money to pay them. They sued because they were held for 444 days. The government isn't paying them with that money. The Obama administration flew pallets of billions of dollars in cash, U.S. dollars and euros over there that they used to fund terror. The Biden administration, in an attempt to suck up to them more, unfroze, I think it was $1 billion, maybe $2 billion. Now, this money could only be used for humanitarian aid, they say. Humanitarian aid. But if I told you that I'm going to cover your food budget, right? This week I'll cover your food. Let's say you spent $150 this week on air, and I'm going to cover your food budget this week. If you were smart, you'd go, all right, I'm going to put that $150 aside that I'm saving while you pay the $150 for it. But that also frees you up to say, you know what, if I have a drinking problem, I got $150 more that I could drink. Or if I got a drug problem, I got $150 more this week that I can use for whatever it is. I've just freed up $150 for you because I'm covering your food budget. It's a pretty simple concept. If you give Iran $1 billion exclusively for food and medicine, and they were already purchasing food and medicine, it's not like they were $1 billion short and people were starving to death. You just gave them $1 billion to do with what they will, not the $1 billion sitting in the Swiss bank account that you can only give directly to the sellers of food and medicine, but the $1 billion sitting in Tehran that they were going to use to buy food and medicine that now they don't have to because you're going to cover it externally. It's a simple concept that Democrats have to lie about. They had, now, with the Obama money, they had no way to prove anything. It's cash. They could do anything they wanted with it, and there's no way to trace it or follow it. That's why they wanted it in cash, and that's probably why Obama wanted to give it to him in cash. With this money, the U.S. government is in charge of releasing it, but not in charge of when to release it or how to release it. They can't say, no, we're not going to buy that food or that medicine. They're saying it can only be used for food or medicine, but that still frees up money that Iran was going to spend on those things to buy things like rockets, missiles, and drones and things. Listen to this exchange between Peter Doocy and Admiral Kirby on this, and listen to the two-step that Kirby tries to do to tell you that he's not peeing on you, it's raining.
Now that we know that the Iranians do not listen to President Biden's public warnings, is there any regret here about unfreezing billions of dollars for Iranian leaders during the president's administration?
What unfreezing are you talking about?
He unfroze billions of dollars.
For Iranian leaders?
Yeah.
Really? I don't think so.
Okay,
so first of all,
it's for humanitarian purposes, but doesn't that...
But you don't believe me.
Well, doesn't that free up money for them to spend on other stuff? Where do you get the money for an unprecedented number of munitions to fire at Israel?
So first of all, I'm betting if they're sitting in Tehran, they're taking it seriously when President Biden says he's going to defend Israel. We put skin in the game, a whole heck of a lot of it, and knocked almost everything out of the sky. So I'm betting they're taking it pretty seriously. And as for this this unfreezing, none of those funds set up in an account, by the way, by the previous administration, goes directly to the Supreme Leader, the IRGC, can only be used for humanitarian purposes, and we're watching that account very, very closely to make sure that that's what happens.
See, Kirby is not a stupid man. He is evil. There's a difference. You understand what I just said. You understand what Peter Doocy said. Kirby understands both of those things. He's counting on the people who support this administration to not know that. And he's probably right. That doesn't make what he's saying any more true. It doesn't make anything, you know, less evil. Just pointing it out. They're very good. He really should be, just from a... If you're playing devil's advocate and you go, the best spokesman for this administration is this guy because he can lie and obfuscate and dance around a subject, whereas Corinne Jean-Pierre just bobs her head and goes, you, this, that, and the other thing, stumbles, fumbles, can't read English, wears glittery eyeshadow so you can tell she's looking down and reading. And like, just dumb. Dumb as the day is long. It's like she's never been in on any meetings. Kirby's not reading anything because he's a thinking human being and he's in on these meetings and he knows what he's doing. He's lying, but he knows what he's doing. Lastly today, I want to play you the jackass of the day. It's John Cougar Mellencamp. You may have fantasies about little pink houses and what have you, but it turns out that this guy's a jerk. And you knew this if you knew anything about him. Very arrogant, left-wing, rabid nut, and just kind of a pill to be around from what I've learned about him. He was given a concert the other day, and he started to lecture the audience about how wonderful Joe Biden is. And the audience didn't want to hear it, and so they let him know. And, well, this happened.
Got real quiet. What do you think I've been doing, you cocksucker? Now, here's the thing, man. You don't know me. You don't f***ing know me. Hey, Joe, find this guy and let me see him after the show. Guys, I can stop this show right now and just go home. Tell you what I'm going to do. Since you've been so wonderful, I'm going to cut about 10 songs out of the show. Here we go. A little ditty about Jack and Diane. The magic kids go in our land. You know what? Show's over.
That's it. You know what? Show's over. I'm at it. I hate you people. And then he just walked off the stage. This is the perfect personification of liberalism, is it not, ladies and gentlemen? I'm taking my ball and going, they're all Cartman. They're all Eric Cartman. He just seems like, for lack of a better word and apologies for sensitive ears, a total and complete asshole. That's enough for today. His little ditty about that jackass. Have a great Wednesday. We'll be back to do it again Thursday. Thanks for listening.